This is But You're Wrong, episode 49. I'm Keith Bodela, and this is Pigeons Creed Part 2. When last we left, we were talking about a show that I'd watched on the History Channel about Hitler possibly escaping and what they had found out, and then that leads into a lot of other conversations about presidential beards, and we get back to pigeons and army service dogs and animals and things like that. Enjoy. Next episode is Saturday, and that is episode 50, which should be 49 more than some. The newest high water mark
is what they were saying. So the skull isn't, they're saying isn't Hitler's. The blood might be, but they don't have Hitler's. They don't have DNA to compare it to, and they were going to compare it to like a family member, and I guess Hitler does have living family, living descendants.
Oh, yeah.
I guess he had like a brother or something that like had kids and.
Huh.
And they were like,
I had no idea.
Well, yeah, they said that they contacted him, and then they were like, but they would not return our requests. And I was like, no shit, because they don't want to appear on camera.
You kidding me? They don't want anyone to know that they're alive.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably changed their name to something. Not so, you know, Hitler-y.
Change the name to Goebbels or something. Something far less evil.
Probably change it to, like, Goldberg or something like that.
You would never suspect it.
Exactly. They hide in the open. So they discovered that, so they're not sure. They're like, well, he could have killed himself and been burned and buried and stuff like that, but he could have also potentially gotten out. So I was thinking, what if this message is actually like a coded message that said like Hitler lives, like Hitler fled country?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
It would be. That'd be like one of the most interesting finds in history.
Because then we would have to figure out what happened to Hitler. And I'm sure he's dead by now.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because otherwise I think he was born in the late 1800s. So, I mean, there's no way.
Yeah, I think so. Well, he was a young – well, yeah, probably. Because he was a young man in World War I.
Right.
He was in his 20s, I think. Yeah, so he would – I mean, he would be – if he was alive, he'd have to be like 115.
Yeah.
And
I think, in addition to the fact that that's extremely unlikely, all his physical ailments probably wouldn't have let him last too long.
Oh, yeah. Like his impotence, his chronic flatulence.
Yeah.
His runny nose.
You can't be fighting if you're on the run. You know, you're trying to remain hidden, and you're just stinking up the joint like stink bugs.
Especially...
You can't be... That can't be happening.
Now I have to leave the part about stink bugs in there so people know why you said that. especially in Argentina, that humid climate, farting, oh, that's not good.
Oh, it would just linger forever.
You're going to get noticed pretty fast.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that they really thought that he could have possibly escaped, so much so that they even, like, doctored photos as to possibilities of how that he might have changed his appearance.
Hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, I've heard, like, oh, he got plastic surgery and, you know, this and that, and it's like, I mean, I guess theoretically it's possible.
I mean, let's say Hitler did escape, and that's what this note actually says. And we find this out, and he did escape. So we try and track down what he did. I'd be really curious what his life was like after. Because, like, you go from, like, trying to take over the world to failing to being like, well, I guess I'll just go to Argentina. And then you just hang out and drink wine all day and just be like, hey, remember the good old times?
Yeah. He's kind of living in a shack. You go from the most powerful man in the world to just some regular jerk.
Yeah, I mean, is he just sit like? Is it like X-Men First Class? He's just sitting in a bar with a couple other Nazis, remembering the good old days.
Yeah, yeah, he's just hanging out, drinking Heinekens.
Yeah, making stupid jokes.
Yeah. I don't know. Just waiting for Magneto to come and just slice and dice you.
Why, Daddy's actually waiting for Magneto to come.
I would be. But then again, I'm a nerd, so.
What if Hitler did survive to be as old as he is now and he actually saw that movie? But he's so senile, he doesn't quite know what's going on. So now he's just sitting in a hut somewhere, thinking that Magneto's actually coming to get him.
Oh, he thinks it's real, for sure.
He just covers himself in plastic. He's like, it will not get me. Everything's made out of wood, like he eats with wooden spoons and stuff. He's like, no metal. No metal.
He rips out all his fillings.
Yeah.
Do you think, now, if he escaped, do you think the first thing he would do is get rid of that mustache?
Yes.
I think he'd get rid of the mustache and he'd get a haircut. Because Hitler without the mustache and the haircut, I think would look quite a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Or, I think he would just grow in the rest of his facial hair.
Oh, a beard? Oh, yeah.
I think he would just grow everything else in. So every morning in the mirror, he could just cover up the new parts and look at his little mustache and be like, yep, still got it.
You think about it, though. That would be perfect because not only does he not just have the little stupid mustache anymore, but it also covers up his facial features.
Yeah.
You'd be, you know, I think you're a different man if you grow a beard rather than get rid of it.
Yeah, he's just got one of those big, like, Duck Dynasty beards now.
Yes. I don't blame him. I want one myself.
Those are pretty cool.
But I got to kind of function in a society, so.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks.
That's just, why are beards not more accepted? They used to be.
I know. Did you know, since. I mean, I'm sure we've kind of discussed this before, but not specifically. But since the invention of the safety razor, every single president has been clean shaven.
That's true.
Yeah, it sucks.
It does suck.
I know. I don't like it at all. I want a bearded president, or at least a president with some facial hair.
Yeah. He doesn't have to have, like, the mutton chops or anything like that, like they used to have.
Like Van Buren or something?
Yeah. Just give me a, give me a mustache, goatee, a beard.
Yeah, like. Give me, like, a fucking Teddy Roosevelt mustache or something.
Or just be like, you know what, if he goes on vacation for a week, just show me a clip where he's not clean shaven.
I know. What a pain in the ass. You got to be present. You got to shave every day because people are going to see you and you got to maintain this. I mean, wouldn't you get sick of it? Wouldn't eventually you just be like, you know what? I'm going to grow a beard.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't feel like shaving. I'm going to let it go for a couple days. I mean, I'd lose it. There's no, I couldn't do it. I like facial hair. I like having facial hair. So I mean, now there's many reasons why I shouldn't be president, but
well,
that's one of them.
Yeah. Yes, there are many reasons. I think this podcast is a reason neither one of us will ever be president, but
that's true.
But like even Bush, he used to go down to his ranch in Texas.
Right.
For like a week or more. And I know he could still run the country out of there because they added all these security upgrades and stuff. And that's all well and good. And he was still meeting with,
Tony Blair.
Maybe Tony Blair. I was thinking, like, specifically, like, cabinet members and, like.
Oh, yeah.
People like that were coming in.
Condoleezza.
Exactly. Sure. But, like, they would also show him being like, well, you know, this tree fell down, so I'm just going to clean it up. And
yeah,
I remember, like, they specifically showed him, like, cutting up a tree that fell down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like when he's down there, unless he was going to meet with like a foreign dignitary or like meet with somebody pretty important, like just let it go for a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like he could have done the beard and gotten away with it.
You know,
or at least something.
Yeah, it's like they don't grow hair. Is the thing. That's my problem. It seems like they don't grow hair.
Yeah. I don't like it.
And because now some people have to shave every day because it grows in real patchy.
Yeah.
I used to know somebody like that, and it just grew in, like, weird patches, so they had, like, weird bald spots in the middle of their cheek where they just didn't grow facial hair, but they grew it all around it, so they had to shave every day.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I don't have that problem.
You have, like, the opposite problem.
I have the problem I have to shave every day, but not because it's patchy.
You have to bring a razor to work just to shave in the middle of the day.
I had
to
shave at 10.
You have to shave every 2 hours, otherwise you look like Michael J. Fox in Teen Wolf.
Yeah, a little bit.
But there's no way that every president since the invention of the safety razor has had splotchy facial hair.
No. Definitely not.
It's just, it's not a thing. It's not possible.
I mean, there's definitely a few guys there I can say definitely would have grown good beards. I think, I bet, now Kennedy, maybe not the Irish. I don't know. They're not typically that good with the beards. I bet Eisenhower could have grown a beard.
Yeah.
It might have been kind of light, but I see a beard from him.
Like, I think Eisenhower would have had like a good, well-trimmed beard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what's Johnson? What's his first name? I can't even think of his name.
Lyndon.
LBJ.
Lyndon.
Yeah. I think he would have had a good beard, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Reagan definitely could have had a beard. You don't think so?
I don't know. I don't know about Reagan and a beard.
Maybe it's tough to tell because he was so old.
I mean, there's been a couple that definitely shouldn't, like Bill Clinton shouldn't have had any facial hair.
Right. No, that just wouldn't have made any sense.
Well, hang on. Let me see. I'm looking at pictures cause I'm just going off memory, but let's see. You know what? Ronald Reagan, again, I think short in check beard.
I think he could have done something though.
I think he could have had a little something. I think he looks better without the beard. Now, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking Bill Clinton, if he had a beard to begin with, maybe.
Yeah.
If one day he was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go fucking beard. It would have made him seem even creepier.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and honestly, I think Obama would probably look all right with a beard.
You think so?
Maybe not a beard. Maybe like a goatee. I think he would look good with some facial hair.
Mm. Now, here's an interesting – well, two things. First, I don't know because – and this is in no way, you know, a racial comment. I'm going to try and phrase it as friendly as I can. But I feel like facial hair is kind of hit or miss in the African American community. Or you know, I'll say with black people in general because I'm thinking of like Idris Elba, great beard.
Yeah,
sure, it's short, but great beard. I've had a couple friends can't grow a beard, can't grow like anything besides like a pencil mustache. Because it doesn't grow in well anywhere else. So, I don't know. Obama, I don't know.
I do think that – I think that black guys do really good with the mustache. I think that is definitely a strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what he could – I don't know. Sometimes – because I work with a couple black guys that have like really good thick beards, like James Harden kind of beards. But – I don't know. I mean, you know what? Not everyone can grow it. Even white people, not everyone can do it. But I don't know. I think Obama could do with something. I think he would look all right with something.
He could, yeah. I think. But I had a thought. Do you think a lot of presidents aren't going to go for the goatee? Because they're afraid that people are going to start making connections between them and the Mirror Mirror universe in Star Trek with evil Spock in the goatee.
Well, I was actually just going to say that I think Obama in particular if he had a goatee, would kind of look like Evil Spock.
Well,
just the way his face is shaped.
I think also because it would be like a black goatee. Like, I think if Clinton had a goatee, it'd probably be like gray.
Yeah, I think it'd be darker than his hair on his head, but...
And you'd be like, all right, that's fine. But I think Obama, and I think Reagan too, if they grew goatees, it would just be like all black facial hair.
Yeah,
Then all you would have to do is put a picture of Evil Spock next to them, and they'd be, and the joke would write itself.
Yeah, no, I was actually just thinking of that, Evil Spock.
Yeah, so yeah, I wonder if that's why they don't go for it.
I don't know. I have a feeling that you and I might be reading too much into that, but I like to think not. No, I like to think that that's exactly why they don't do it.
Well, here's the thing, because I guarantee that presidential facial hair has come up before in meetings, and their staff is like, "Sir, you can't do it. Like, you can't." And he's like, "No, I just want to grow a goatee, just a you know, basic goatee." And then like the new like young intern is like, "Mr. President." Because his voice cracks as he's in the back of the room.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. And then he like pulls up a picture of Evil Spock on his phone. And he's like, that's the bad guy from Star Trek. And the president's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to make you rich and elect you to some cabinet office, even though you know nothing about it. And that's how politics is done.
It is. You know who I think would have had a really... just could have had a really like big, gross, like homeless man beard? Nixon.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he could have just had like a big, bushy, like kind of just like it smelled like booze kind of beard.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. And you know what? Maybe I'm just partially basing that on his personality, but I think so.
I feel like Nixon should have had like the evil mustachioed villain mustache that like curls up at the end, the nice handlebar one that curls up a couple times.
Hmm.
And he just curls down the end of his finger while he's making up plans in the White House.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what Nixon would have been like.
Well, I feel like he just when he's, you know, plotting or something, him being able to stroke a mustache or a beard just would have been very fitting.
I feel like a lot more of them could have had just a nice, simple, you know, well-trimmed just beard.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's a book on presidential beards.
Unfortunately, the book would end in the, like, teens.
Maybe, but here's the thing. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it talks about...
about possible beards.
About why they don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Here's an article about presidential elections and beards. Maybe we'll have to, you know what, maybe we'll save this.
Next time on Beard Talk.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a little research on this and we'll talk about it another time. Because I did have another good story about pigeons.
Okay.
And World War II. Because then I was like, wait a minute, they really use that many pigeons? And I was so impressed by that I did some more research on World War II pigeons. Let's see if I can find it here. And there was one that I was just like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. This guy, this bird.
Oh.
Okay, so here's some stuff on general war pigeons. So I guess it actually started in the 19th century. They had them in World War I, and they actually were using them, I guess, for surveillance.
Okay.
Who
would the pigeons report back?
Well, no, what they do, and there's a picture of it on Wikipedia, they strapped a camera to the pigeon.
Oh.
And then I guess it was taking pictures while it was flying.
Interesting.
So let's see. This is a little history on World War II or later, and then the actual bird I was going to talk about, I thought it was World War II, but it's actually World War I. The Dickin Medal... the highest possible decoration of valor given to animals was awarded to 32 pigeons, including the United States Army Pigeon Service's G.I. Joe and the Irish pigeon, Patty. So not only were the pigeons used, but 32 of them were awarded medals.
That's awesome.
The UK maintained the air ministry.
Can you imagine the medal ceremony?
Oh God. She's just trying to pin it to the bird.
It's like the ceremony at the end of A New Hope, but it's just all pigeons.
And then Chewbacca's still on the end, and he still doesn't get one.
He doesn't get anything. Anyways, continue.
The UK maintained the Air Ministry Pigeon Section during World War II, and for a while thereafter, a pigeon policy committee made decisions about the uses of pigeons in military contexts. The head of the section, Leah Rayner, reported in 1945 that pigeons could be trained to deliver small explosives or bioweapons to precise targets. The ideas were not taken up by the committee, and in 1948, the UK military stated the pigeons were no longer being used. However, the UK Security Service, MI5, was still concerned about the use of pigeons by foreign enemies. Till 1950, they arranged for 100 birds to be maintained by a civilian pigeon fancier in order to prepare countermeasures.
Uh-huh.
So they were still... They were still concerned about pigeons. Greg, have you ever been this concerned about pigeons before?
No, I've never been that concerned about pigeons.
I think you should be, because they could be carrying small explosives or bioweapons. I think they're always carrying bioweapons.
That's true too. I mean, how big could these explosives be? I mean, let's be serious.
Well, I guess they're more worried about them maybe landing on a specified target. Like, I mean, imagine, like, a pigeon flies in and lands on a dignitary's shoulder. Is anybody going to really do anything right away? Because they're going to just be like, oh, look, a pigeon landed.
Yeah.
And then,
And then he shits and it blows up.
Yeah. He poops first, and then the pigeon blows up.
He definitely poops first.
Yeah. Completely unrelated, because the pigeon doesn't know he's about to die.
No, absolutely not.
Because they wouldn't tell the pigeon, because the pigeon would probably be like, no, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's not, you know. Anyways, I was going to go in another direction. I won't.
Okay. Were you going to say pigeon terrorists? Pigeons?
I was going to say, yeah, that the pigeon has more sense than... you know. Anyways.
All right. So World War One. We gotta talk about this other bird. Crap, let me pull up this right. Thank God for editing. Cher Ami. It's a French bird.
Uh-huh.
It was a registered black Czech cock. Go ahead and laugh. Homing pigeon, which had been donated by the pigeon fanciers of Britain for use by the U.S. Army Signal Corps in France during World War I, and had been trained by American pigeoneers.
Oh, pigeoneers.
Okay. Now, you ready for this? It's a little bit of a long story, but it's good. This is probably one of the best World War I stories I've read.
All right.
On October 3rd, 1918, Charles Whittlesey and more than 500 men were trapped in a small depression on the side of the hill behind enemy lines without food or ammunition. They were also beginning to receive friendly fire from Allied troops who did not know their location.
Uh-huh.
Surrounded by the Germans, many were killed and wounded in the first day, and by the second day, just more than 194 men were still alive. So in one day, they lost 300 men. About.
It's a lot.
Whittlesey dispatched messages by pigeon, which I guess was relatively normal in World War One. The pigeon carried the first message and said, many wounded, we cannot evacuate. But it was shot down.
Yeah.
A second bird was sent with the message, men are suffering, can support be sent? That pigeon was also shot down. Only one homing pigeon was left, Cher Ami. He was dispatched with a note and a canister on his left leg. We are along the road parallel to 276.4. Our own artillery is dropping a barrage directly on us. For heaven's sake, stop it. My only thing is, I don't know why none of this was included in the first two messages.
Yeah, I was going to say, those first two, he was just kind of like, oh, hey, by the way, we're stuck. And it's like, okay, well, we don't know where you were.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking that the first two messages might not be entirely accurate, because I feel like he should have said where they were.
Yeah.
Like, agreed. maybe he said those two things, and then also he wrote, like, their approximate coordinates.
Right. Yeah, hopefully.
Asher and me tried to fly back home. The Germans saw him rising out of the brush and opened fire. For several moments, Asher and me flew with bullets zipping through the air all around him. Asher and me was eventually shot down, but miraculously managed to take flight again.
Huh.
He arrived back at his loft at division headquarters 25 miles to the rear in just 65 minutes, helping to save the lives of the 194 survivors. In this last mission, Jeremy delivered the message, despite having been shot through the breast, blinded in one eye, covered in blood, and with a leg hanging only by a tendon.
Wow.
So, I mean, just think about that. Okay, we're shot, we're blind in one eye, we're covered in blood, and one of our legs is hanging by a tendon. And yet we still managed to complete our mission.
Oh, no, forget it. You never hear from me again. I'm just giving up. I'm just going to roll over and die.
Jeremy became the hero of the 77th Infantry Division. Army medics worked long and hard to save his life. They were unable to save his leg, so they carved a small wooden one for him.
Oh.
When he recovered enough to travel, the little one-legged hero, was put on a boat to the United States with General John J. Pershing, personally seeing Jeremy off as he departed France. Upon return to the United States, Jeremy became the mascot of the Department of Service. The pigeon was awarded the, I'm going to butcher this name, Croix de Guerre, I'm assuming that's the Cross of War, medal with a palm oak leaf cluster for his heroic service in delivering 12 important messages in Verdun. So he delivered a shitload of other messages, but that one, he really...
That put him over the top.
Yeah, he really earned with that one. He died at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey on June 13th, 1919. Now, let's see. So he lived another 8 months, about?
Hmm.
He lived about another 8 months, but he died from the wounds he received in battle and was later inducted into the Racing Pigeon Hall of Fame in 1931. That, I think, is weird, but I guess that's the only place that you can... Like, wow. I guess that's one of the few places that pigeons are honored.
Yeah, I guess.
He also received a gold medal from the Organized Bodies of American Racing Pigeon Fanciers in recognition of his extraordinary service during World War I. I'm guessing that... Because I think it said that he was donated. Oh, but he was donated by Pigeon Fanciers of Britain. I don't know, maybe he used to be, like, a racing bird, and then he got drafted.
He did not dodge.
No. Because they wouldn't let him out of his cage. So they were like, well, you suck. He's in there trying to burn his draft card, but it won't work. To American school children of the 1920s and 1930s, Jeremy was as well known as any human World War I hero.
Really?
Yeah. This is where it starts to get a little weird. Jeremy's body was later mounted by a taxidermist and enshrined in the Smithsonian Institution.
Holy shit.
It is currently on display with that of Sergeant Stubby. And I look, that's a dog. That was awarded.
Sergeant Stubby. Yeah.
in the National Museum of American History's Price of Freedom exhibit. Now, here's a little controversy.
Uh-oh.
Sharon Me was a hen, originally registered as black check cock. Go ahead and laugh.
Yeah.
Sharon Me was discovered after death upon taxidermy procedure to be a hen.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately, she is still erroneously represented as a cockbird at National Museum of American History and many other educational and military history information services.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that nuts, though? The bird, like, saved 194 men.
It's amazing. It's also sad because that bird accomplished more than I probably will in my entire life.
Yeah, that bird did way more than either one of us ever will.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the saving of lives.
Yeah, there's no way that you or I are going to save 194 lives. I mean, something big has to happen for that to be a thing.
Yeah.
Would you like to know real quick about Sergeant Stubby? I'll read you.
I would like to know about his military service.
Stubby served with the 102nd Infantry, 26th Yankee Division in the trenches in France for 18 months and participated in 4 offenses and 17 battles. He entered combat on February 5th, 1918 at Chemin des Dames, north of someplace, and was under constant fire day and night for over a month. In April 1918, during a raid to take this other place.
You're so good with your French terminology.
I'm terrible at it.
I know, me too.
Stubby was wounded in the foreleg by the retreating Germans throwing hand grenades. He was sent to the rear for convalescence, and as he had done on the front, was able to improve morale. When he recovered from his wounds, Stubby returned to the trenches. After being gassed himself, Stubby learned, I think of your dog, and I think of Cosmo and his terrible farts, and I'm like, hey, he does gas himself.
He got gassed.
But obviously they don't mean that. After being gassed himself, Stubby learned to warn his unit of poison gas attacks. Oh. He was gassed himself, and then after that, I guess on his own, because it said Stubby learned to warn. I guess they didn't train him, but he figured out whenever he smelled the same smell to warn his unit of the gas attacks.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, because, I mean, a dog's sense of smell is incredible.
Far superior to our own.
Far superior to any machine we can invent.
Yes.
They had to pass a law that said that a dog's sense of smell could be considered actual evidence, as opposed to just like circumstantial evidence.
Uh huh.
Because what they used to do was like they would use dogs to for like arson fires and stuff like that.
Right. To sniff out if there was any propellants.
Yeah, to sniff out stuff like that, or to like track it on somebody or things like that. And what they were running into was dogs were finding stuff that when they tried to back it up with a machine, they couldn't do.
Right.
And I forget the exact numbers, but they did a test so that they knew it was so many parts, you know, per million or parts per trillion or whatever. Knew it was in this sample, and the dog could detect it, but the machine couldn't.
Yeah.
So after presenting that, they passed some kind of a law that said that the dog's sense of smell could actually be admitted as evidence.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's changed because I'm going off information that was probably like 6 years ago.
Right.
But I mean, so it could be the same now, but that's still pretty impressive that it was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That our machines still weren't matched to that. He also located wounded soldiers in no man's land, and since he could hear the whine of incoming artillery shells before humans could, became very adept at letting his unit know when to duck for cover.
Oh. It was duck.
Yeah. I was like, how does he, like, I guess he was just very well behaved, and then when shit was going on, that's when he would start barking.
Yeah, I guess so. And they were like, oh, something must be doing.
So they're putting on their gas masks and ducking at the same time because they can't figure out which bark is for what.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do. Why not?
I mean, better safe than sorry. He was solely responsible for capturing a German spy in the Argonne following the retaking of Chateau Thierry by the U.S. The thankful woman of the town made Stubby a chamois coat.
Chamois?
No, not chamois. I don't know what it is, but it's some kind of a coat on which were pinned his many medals. There is also a legend that while in Paris with Corporal Conroy, Stubby saved a young girl from being hit by a car. At the end of the war, Conroy smuggled Stubby home. I don't know why he had to be smuggled home.
He had to be smuggled?
Yeah. It says there's also a legend that while in Paris with Corporal Conroy, Stubby saved a young girl from being hit by a car. At the end of the war, Conroy smuggled Stubby home.
Oh. Interesting.
I don't know. After returning home, Stubby became a celebrity and marched in or normally led many parades across the country. He met Presidents Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge, and Warren G. Harding.
Everyone's favorite.
Starting in 1921, he attended George Washington... Starting in 1921, he attended Georgetown University Law Center with Conroy and became the Georgetown... How do you say it? Hoyas?
Yeah.
Hoyas team mascot.
Oh.
He would be given the football at halftime and would nudge the ball around the field to amuse the fans. You're like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. That dance, really monkey, weird. Dance.
Stubby was made a life member of the American Legion, the Red Cross, and the YMCA. In 1921, the Humane Education Society awarded him a special gold medal for his service to the country. It was presented by General John Pershing. Wait, John Pershing was the same one from the other one, wasn't he?
I think so.
John Pershing was a guy, like an important guy that I should probably know, isn't he? The name sounds
familiar. I'll be honest, I'm not really sure who he is.
The name sounds familiar, but I'll have to look that up another time. In 1926, Stubby died in Conroy's arms. His remains are featured in the Price of Freedom, Americans at War exhibit at the Smithsonian. Stubby was honored with a brick in the Walk of Honor at the United States World War I Monument in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Here are some of the medals that he received. 3 service stripes. Yankee Division YD patch. French Medal, Battle of Verdun. 1st Annual American Legion Convention Medal. New Haven World War I Veterans Medal. Republic of France Grand War Medal. St. Mihiel Campaign Medal. Wound Stripe, replaced with Purple Heart when introduced in 1932. He got a Purple Heart.
It's impressive.
Chateau Thierry Campaign Medal. 6th Annual American Legion Convention Humane Education Society Gold Medal. He got
Again,
a Purple Heart.
This animal did more than we will ever do.
I'm so sad right now. Let's see. I was going to look to see what breed he was, but... Nope. Stubby's breed was unknown, as no one ever discovered where he hailed from originally. One day he appeared at Yale Field in New Haven, Connecticut, while a group of soldiers were training, stopping to make friends with soldiers as they drilled. One soldier, Corporal Robert Conroy, developed a fondness for the dog when it became time for the outfit to ship out. Conroy hid Stubby on board the troop ship. Why is this not a movie?
You would think. Like that war horse crap? You'd think that they would do Stubby.
Yeah, especially because the two guys were together the entire time, it seems.
Yeah. And they could even integrate the thing with the pigeon.
Oh my god, dude, this should be a Pixar movie.
It could be. Yeah. I don't know, they get Tobey Maguire to do a voice.
What? Why Tobey Maguire?
No. Hear me out. They get Tobey Maguire to do a voice.
Okay.
And they get Robert De Niro to narrate. And they have the pigeon and Stubby. And it would be good.
No, here's what I'm thinking. Because here's the thing. You need French and British people, too. So, all right, hang on. I got to make sure I'm thinking of the right people.
Wait, you want Jean Reno from Leon the Professional?
No. Although.
I'm trying to think of other famous French actors.
Okay, so I think the bad guy needs to be Michael Fassbender.
Okay.
As the German. I think the dog's American. And is the pigeon American?
I think the pigeon is too, because I think they shipped him over there.
All right. All right. So let's get who played crap? Why am I blanking on his name? Who played Captain Kirk in the new Star Trek?
Fuck! I can't think of his name.
Chris Pine? No.
Yes. No.
No. Yes.
Was it Chris Pine?
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, Chris Pine.
All right.
Let's get Chris Pine to play Corporal Conroy, and then
you can't just have the whole cast of First Class in this thing.
Chris Pine wasn't in First Class, was he? Who the fuck are you thinking of?
You just said. Never mind. Damn it. Sorry. Sorry.
I can just imagine you slowly backing away. Sorry.
Yep. Forget it. Forget I said it.
I think the dog needs to be voiced by like Bruce Willis or something.
Already happened.
When?
Wasn't he the voice of in Look Who's Talking?
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, forget that. All right, let's go with Robert De Niro as the voice of the dog.
All right.
And then who's the voice of the pigeon?
Ellen DeGeneres.
No.
Why not? That's what they do.
Oh, but it was a girl.
Yeah. Either that or
And that can be a running bit where it's a girl, but they think that's a boy.
True. You know, because she's, you know.
I wasn't gonna take it that far since it's a Pixar movie, but
that might be a little too racy for a Pixar, but she's already been in a Pixar movie.
Yes, but not in the context of being a lesbian.
No, they never really mentioned it.
Yeah, they don't mention lesbians in Pixar movies, I don't think.
Dory the fish. Yeah, they never really say what she's interested in.
But yeah, okay, so Ellen DeGeneres can be the... I'm still iffy on that being the pigeon, but we'll go with it.
Oh, I mean, I'm not married to it, but, you know, I think it's an all right choice.
We'll have to get somebody to be the guy that the pigeon saved. The British officer. Or was it a French officer? I think it was a British officer, wasn't it?
I think it might have been British.
No, I'm confusing myself. I think this could totally be a Pixar movie.
I mean, I'd go see it.
Although, how do we get them together? We have to get them to team up at some point, though.
Yeah, it would be like...
What? Maybe they end up at the same... like animal hospital getting fixed up together, and then
because they both got injured.
Yeah, and then they have to go save somebody else, or they have to stop like a German spy. They have to wait. Okay, follow me on this. They have to stop a Nazi spy that's a cat.
Yeah, but it's World War I.
Damn it! A German.
I mean,
spy.
You still want to stop the Germans, no matter what war it is.
All right, I got excited because the Nazi cat would have been perfect. All right, a German cat.
Who voices the German cat?
I don't know. Who's a German actress?
I was going to go in a completely opposite direction. I was going to say Antonio Banderas.
Nah. Why Antonio Banderas?
I don't know. He played a cat before.
I don't know. Who are famous German actresses?
No, it doesn't need to be a girl. Make it Anthony Hopkins.
Wait a minute. What if we move Michael Fassbender to the role of German spy cat, and then we make Anthony Hopkins the villain?
Yeah, but isn't the German spy cat the villain?
No, but there's got to be a human, because it's all about the bond between the pets and the humans.
Yeah.
So the animals have to band together to bring their human counterparts together to fight, to defeat the human bad guy. So there's a human bad guy, and then there's a cat, a feline bad guy. And everybody's like the cat's working with the evil German dude, and then the pigeon's working with the other dude, and the dog's working with the other dude, with Chris Pine, and then they all kind of get together, and then they win the war.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is getting a little too much. A little bit.
Really, you were on board up until now?
Yeah. I think it's losing my attention.
Is it losing your attention, or is it actually too much?
No, it's just a bit too much.
How is it too much?
It's too unfocused. You're gonna lose the audience. Your audience is kids. Then you got all these weird.
What are you fucking Lucas now?
You got two different. You got the German working with the bad guy, the bad German. You know, it's too much.
No, there's six characters in the whole thing.
Exactly, it's too much. You got to cut that down to four.
Fuck you. It's a good idea, and I'm making it.
All right,
I'm gonna make this happen.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And instead of executive producer credit, you only get producer credit.
Good. I don't want to be executive producer on this thing.
No, executive producer doesn't have to do anything. Producer does.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
We've been recording for a fuck long time.
I know.
I may split this up.
Jesus Christ. I gotta get to bed.
That's your response to everything, Greg.
What?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know. Do you have anything to add?
Nope, I think I'm good.
I think the fact that these animals have achieved more than we will pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, it's really puts you in your place.
I'm gonna go and drink scotch in a dark, quiet room and think about the choices I've made in my life now.
Yeah,
but they didn't do a podcast, so
no, they just saved lives.
Maybe we're saving lives right now.
It's true.
Maybe. Probably not. All right. This has been But You're Wrong. I'm Keith.
I'm Greg.
And do check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/ButYou'reWrong. Twitter, BYW Podcast. Everything's available on iTunes, Stitcher, and other mobile-y apps. There's a bunch out there, and I think they all take from iTunes, so we should be on there. And damn it, we forgot to address the sign off.
Yeah,
we had some. Oh well, now we'll work on that another time. So no regrets and that other thing.
Bye, everybody.
Doesn't anyone want to hug me goodbye?